Hey guys, I'm Stevie Nelson.
And I'm Dave Horwitz.
And this is I Burn Everything, a food and relationship podcast in the time of both social distancing and social unrest.
Oh, my good God. I got to, you know, we did, listeners, I'm going to put it out there. We had a little debrief before this. This isn't totally spontaneous, but Stevie was saving that one for me. And it hit me. I really like that.
As I was saying it, I was like, what's about to come out of my mouth? This should be interesting.
Oh, I really thought you had it locked and loaded.
No, it was spontaneous, and it was, I'm glad that's what came out. Honestly, like I had no idea what was going to happen.
I guess that's part of the magic of podcasting. Another piece of the magic is normally is totally the wrong word, but the past couple of months we have been recording separately a couple of blocks away from each other.
Yeah.
But you are currently way farther away from me. You are in Portland, are you not?
I am in Portland. What if I was like, nope.
Nope, everything I said to you before this was a lie.
I'm in Portland. I took a road trip with Holiday and Rocket, my dachshunds, and we took 2 days to drive up to Portland to come visit my sister, who just moved up here right before the pandemic hit. And so I'm here in one of her bedrooms, one of three, in case you're wondering what it's like to live in Portland for the same price I pay. She has three bedrooms, a garage, a yard, and I don't.
What are we doing in LA, Stevie?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. LA is an interesting place because it's, to me, it's where it's at. Like, I don't really know if I see myself leaving LA. I love LA and I feel at home in LA, and I grew up just outside of LA, but in LA County. And I don't see myself leaving LA, but it is absolutely the most difficult place to make a living and feed yourself and house yourself. Like, it is so challenging in comparison to the rest of the United States. It's just like the cost of living is incredibly high. And right now, none of this seems super relevant, but it's what we're talking about.
Oh, I mean, look, we can't, well, I guess it can feel necessary to partition off your brain and say,
yeah,
this is the part of my brain that is constantly scared of coronavirus or is trying to put all of the different social distancing parameters into play at once so I can be safe. And this is the part of my brain that cares deeply about social justice. And this is the part of my brain that is interested in my interpersonal relationships. And this is the part that wonders if my rent money could best be used in another city. But honestly, they are very, I believe they are all very interconnected. And at the risk of thrusting a segue onto you, I wanted to give a little plug for an article I read that was kind of amazing, because I've been looking for anything that could possibly encapsulate the experience that we're all living through right now. Yeah. And it's an article called "The Story Has Gotten Away From Us, 6 Months of Life and Death in America" by Betsy Moraes and Alexandria Neeson. And we'll put a link to this in the show notes. But Here's just a paragraph from the beginning of it. For the most part, journalism has decided that the coronavirus and the killing of George Floyd, a 46-year-old black man in Minneapolis, are two distinct stories. That's fiction. Floyd's murder under the knees of a white police officer and the demonstrations in response occurred as part of a cascade of events. There's a history of systemic racism in America, police brutality, and protest. There's the spread of COVID-19, the disease caused by the new coronavirus, and its economic effects. Floyd had worked as a security guard, alternately at a Salvation Army and a club called Conga Latin Bistro, which closed amid the mass shutdown of bars and restaurants. On Memorial Day, he walked into a corner store for a pack of cigarettes. He was arrested for trying to pay with a fake $20 bill. His punishment was death. An autopsy report later showed that Floyd had been infected by the coronavirus before he was killed. His last words were the same as those of so many Black Americans: "I can't breathe." And That's the preview I will leave our audience and you with. But it really, it just felt, I know, it's so unbelievably heavy, but I think it really speaks to the point that all of this stuff and everything swirling around in our brains and everything in the news and everything happening to the country is connected. And you and I, full disclosure audience, we've been struggling over how to continue the show or how to do it. I mean, we took last week off, but it's not as if just because we took 1 week off, everything went back to normal. We're not, it would be nice if we had the blinders, the cultural blinders on that would make us go like, let's have a celebrity chef on.
Oh my gosh.
I know,
Yeah.
I know.
Well, it would be, I think you, if that's the case, if you take a show that's typically about food and relationships during this time and you don't address what is happening in America right now with police brutality, with the Black community, with racism, I think you are deaf. And honestly, like, you're not reading the room. And if you like, I also think like there's a world where people want something to be back to normal. But in my understanding of this, this is the new normal. And the new norm, like going back to normal means going back to racism. And for me, I'm like, nah, let's move forward. Let's go forward and incorporate all of this into our conversations, despite how uncomfortable it might be, despite it, despite us maybe being like messing up with it. Like, I'm open to failing and messing up, with the intention of opening up the conversation here and not ignoring it.
Yes, I totally agree, and I'm seeing a lot of very valid takes online that are essentially saying it's okay that you're uncomfortable. You should be uncomfortable. It's if you weren't uncomfortable, there would be something else wrong. If the people who protested en masse because they wanted a haircut that now don't understand why everyone else is so mad. It's infuriating and it's insane. And honestly, I would rather overstep my bounds and say something wrong, maybe not intentionally wrong, but
Yeah, and get corrected.
yes, and, which is not to say I'm going to go out of my way to be wrong or to be inappropriate, but I think that the yes, it would feel like we were censoring ourselves or being untrue to how we're actually feeling. So, yeah, I think that we wanted to do a little slightly shorter episode and talk to our listeners because, Steve, I don't know if you know this, we are not the number one show on iTunes. We're
What?
not, we're not number one on Apple Podcasts. I know that
Wait.
that might be crazy. I know I've been telling you that for years that we're number one. But I just wanted
Wait.
to come out and say,
Oh no.
I know we're not the number one show. That is to say, we do have an audience, and it would be really, really, I don't know. I feel like we would be doing a disservice to people who have been really loyal to our
Yeah.
show.
Yeah, me too. Also, something I want to say before we start giving. So, Dave and I have both, been doing a lot of reading, doing a lot of listening, doing a lot of work to adjust our own selves and to understand better. I want to say I understand that both Dave and I are two white Jewish people. I understand that our experience is going to be very different. And this is not coming from a Black experience. But what we want to share with you is the things and resources that we as white people have found helpful so that maybe we can help other people access these resources without feeling burnt out and sifting through. We're going to make it easy for you guys, and we're going to talk about it, and everything will be linked at the bottom of the episode. And I hope we're not trying, like, I hope you guys know that we're not trying to school you or teach you because we are learning right with you. We are just sharing things that have been helpful. Like, think of it as like an Instagram story where we're just sharing our things that we were like, this was helpful for me to understand this.
Yeah, I mean, and it's honestly, it's again, you can feel preached to or annoyed by this if you want. Every experience is valid. I just thought I should come out and say that because
Yeah,
to
that's so
me,
true.
because I need resources for myself, and so just passing them along feels like a little small tiny service. I mean, I have been donating and listening and reading, and I want to do my part, and this is never, it's never going to be enough, but it is a start. And I also think that being able to read and educate myself on things that I had at best, there's some stuff I knew, but there is a lot of information that was shaky at best to me in terms of,
same.
You know, you put a gun to my head and say, you know, explain the 13th Amendment to me, I would probably have, you know, pissed myself, which is not something I want to do, especially not in front of an audience. But for me, you know, there's even as a, you know, card carrying liberal Dem, you know, quote unquote snowflake, there is some stuff that, you know, some, it can be hard to talk to your family, it can be hard to talk to people of different generations, it can be hard to talk to your neighbors and friends, and because you don't know exactly where their politics lean. I mean, to me, I'm very lucky. Everyone's saying, you know, talk to your racist friends and your racist relatives, and I'm like, well, I don't have any, but same. I do, you know, just last night my mom was emailing me and asked my brother and I for a list of places to donate. She's part of an organization that had a couple, you know, some extra money, and she asked for, you know, are there any coronavirus, you know, sort of places to donate, or anywhere else? And I basically said, I have seen some, you know, relief fund things for people affected by coronavirus, but now that we are several months in, it feels like the real work to do and the real places to donate are dot dot dot. And then I just shared a bunch of, you know, Black Lives Matter places. I gave her the link that I gave to our audience last week when I gave a little 5-minute message, and my brother gave some too. And so I'm hoping that, you know, starts a bigger conversation, because it's just the time to sit on your hands has passed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think one of the cool things that I've learned, at least like through doing this, is like, you know, I didn't know until maybe 2 weeks ago that it wasn't okay to say, like, look, I'm not racist, right? Because I didn't know that wasn't okay, because truthfully, like how one of my friends worded it is that like all of us grew up in a racist society where there's systemic racism. So despite the fact that we think we're not racist, we all have racist ideas and we all have racist things. And part of like, and that's like goes to our first, like my first suggestion, which is a podcast to listen to, which is Brené Brown's podcast with Ibram Kendi. And he's a doctor, but he says he does a podcast with her on Unlocking Us called How to Be Anti-Racist. And he's like, the first step is acknowledging that we're all racist, and he includes himself in that as a Black man. And I think that's like something I learned that I didn't know. And I didn't know the phrase anti-racist. I did think it was enough to be not racist. And I'm glad to be corrected and to now understand that terminology. But that podcast, and we'll give a link to it, was incredibly informative. He also wrote a book on anti-racism that's highly recommended, that I'm going to read next.
Yeah. And just to clarify, I mean, I think that is a point extremely well taken, that we all kind of live with inherent racism. It's not that it's not okay to say that you're not racist, but yeah. I think the conversation has shifted to that it's not enough to just not be racist, because your silence, if you are being silent while, you know, injustice is happening around you, or, you know, it's basically an abuse of your own white privilege. And it's an interesting thing to watch people get really, really, really touchy about all this. Mm-hmm. It's very telling. And it's really uncomfortable for me to see, which is good. Again, discomfort is fine in a time like this, but I kind of can't, and this is a thing I've seen shared a little bit, and I actually did, you know, tweeted some dumb thing about it a week ago, and then saw that there was like a full Michael Che stand-up routine about it. But it's basically how the word matter and Black Lives Matter, how little that's asking. And it really, like, in the beginning of all this, right after George Floyd was murdered, I couldn't get over how little it's asking to accept and admit and believe that Black lives matter. I don't know. I went into like a real thought spiral about how we as people and white people take up so much space in the world. And the phraseology, the wording behind it is just saying, can you just admit that we matter and to not dispose of our lives? And then I just saw passed around. There's a whole, if you Google Michael Che, Black Lives Matter, I'm not the hugest fan of, SNL Weekend Update, but it was a very, it's 3.5 minutes and it'll make you go, oh yeah, this is, it really is asking almost nothing. And the fact that people want to come back and say all lives matter,
I know,
or blue lives matter, and it's like, that's not what we're talking about right
also,
now.
Also, if it's like, that's, it's like, it's like when you are in a relationship and you tell someone they hurt your feelings. So if I was like, hey Dave, you hurt my feelings, and then you went back and you said, well, someone hurt my feelings like 4 years ago.
Yeah, you're hurt. Well, I'm hurt.
Yep. It's like the same argument. It's like, that's not the topic. Stay on topic. And to me, any resistance to someone hearing, like, I got in a, Instagram argument yesterday with a guy who kept saying like, all lives matter. Like, what about, the Hispanic community? What about the Asian community? And I'm like, yeah, okay. Not what we're talking about. And also, why is it so hard for people to say Black Lives Matter? Like, why is that hard to admit?
It just doesn't. It makes little to no sense to me, but I do think it's people who love to get into the semantics of things because it allows them to skirt over the gigantic glaring issue. You know, it's like, it really bothers me to use when people want to come back at the simplest. That's what people are asking. They're saying, please validate our existence. And they're saying, well, what about my existence? And it's like, okay, well, how about for the entire history of the entire world, your existence has been validated.
That's the thing. It's like, they're like, well, what about us? And you're like, no one has ever told you your life doesn't matter. That's the truth. You know what I mean? Like, no one has ever said to me, my life doesn't matter. I've always known that my life does matter. So it's like, what a bizarre, what a totally bizarre point of view to be like, well, what about me? How can I make this about me? Like, good news and bad news. This is not about you.
Yeah. I guess my link, which kind of dovetails into a couple other recommendations, is kind of sort of all encompassing with what we've just been talking about. Just, the, to really zoom out, because for me, again, watching 50 videos of police brutality on Twitter in a row has not unlocked some special part of my brain where I'm now suddenly an anti-racism genius, and I've unlocked some new intelligence for me. It upsets me, and I just want to know more. And so, kind of, I guess peeling back the layers of the onion as much as I can, I have watched a bunch of stuff and read some stuff and listened, so right now there's an episode of the New Yorker Radio Hour from January of this year called Mass Incarceration Then and Now. And again, that will be in the show notes, a link to it, but it has a couple of different stories about basically exactly what it says, mass incarceration, and how it relates and affects the Black community. And it features an interview with Michelle Alexander, who is the author of The New Jim Crow, which is a book that came out 10 years ago that has been a bestseller for, I believe, years at this point.
I just ordered it. It's on my front doorstep.
I think it is not just essential reading, but the interview is fantastic. And there's a whole kind of human interest piece at the end about a man who was released from prison after 25 years behind bars, and just the struggle for him to get his first job as a free man and get his first cell phone and try to date. It's extremely It's not just compelling, but it kind of raises all these questions that, you know, a deeper dive will definitely reward. And so Michelle Alexander, who wrote that book, is also interviewed in 13th, the Ava DuVernay documentary about the 13th Amendment, which is currently on Netflix. So, it's very easy for you to watch that right now for free, quote unquote, if you already have Netflix, or if you have your sister's ex-boyfriend's landlord's Netflix account, you can watch that right now. It's extremely comprehensive, and it also kind of condenses a lot of information and a lot of interviews and a lot of statistics into a, and you know, this is kind of a lot of how new documentaries are, but it tackles a lot in a small amount of time. Yeah. And so I think it can unlock a bunch of different recommendations. Like if you like what's contained in that, and you like Michelle Alexander's interview, buy her book. And there's just, it's just really kind of, it really was eye-opening to me as far as, you know, why and how police are the way they are now, and how the prison system became the way it is. And a lot of it is like the 80s, the drug war, Ronald Reagan, and then it zooms forward and oops, guys, it's Bill Clinton.
Oh man.
You know, like the guy that we all goofed at as kids going, he's playing the saxophone, wearing sunglasses. He was at the same time helping to put a lot of black people behind bars.
Dave, Bill Clinton is like turning up in so many of these documentaries. He's also in the Jeffrey Epstein. Oh, Jesus. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton, we all thought he was so, what a dope. And then now we're just like, what a maybe not so great human.
Well, honestly, Stevie, like I think Bill Clinton is a really, really excellent example if we're talking about trying to understand exactly what is happening in America and how it's happening and how we missed it. And we missed it because news media, like white-owned and controlled news media, was like, hey, this guy is a law and order Democrat, and he really cares about keeping our streets safe, which led to hiring 100,000 extra police officers, which then led to hiring 50,000 more on top of that, which then led to mass incarceration. And also a lot of people being put to death. Like, he was really pro death penalty, and this was a Democrat. And the thing is, like, what we saw was a compassionate guy. Like, Phil Hartman played him on SNL, and he just kept going, I feel your pain. And he was jogging into a McDonald's and eating chicken nuggets, and we thought that was hilarious. And he was on Arsenio Hall playing the saxophone. And it's like, that's what I knew about my president when I was, you know, 9, 10 years old, because that's how old I was when he was in office. And I did not investigate further, but also I was a little kid. And it's like, you can zoom out even further and go, well, think about how the story of Thanksgiving was taught in school. We wore paper Indian headdresses and pilgrim hats, and they all sat down and had a nice dinner together. And it's, you know, I feel like my hope is that a lot of this stuff starts to feel less radical and less like, oh, listen to you, like stoking the fire. It's like, no, this is stuff that we should really be talking about all the time now. And I hope it doesn't stop.
Yeah, let's keep the conversation going. Hey guys, Stevie here. Just wanted to say, hey, why don't you contact us? You can email us at iburneverythingpod@gmail.com, or you can even call our hotline and leave a message, 213-458-5236. It's 213-458-5236, and we may even talk about your message or email on a future episode. So get to it. My next resource, I'm not going to talk too much about it. I just want to tell you guys about it. It's an organization called To Write Love on Her Arms, which is, I think I heard them pronounce it TWOLA. TWOLA? It's a nonprofit movement dedicated to presenting hope and finding help for people struggling with depression, addiction, self-injury, and suicide. But they have on their website right now a blog post, and on their main website, if you look at it, resources created by and for Black people, which in my opinion is pretty incredible. They talk about mental health on there. They give links to you, to anyone suffering from like backlash right now in terms of mental health. And I just thought that was like a really nice resource in case anybody needs it who's listening. Go ahead and check that out. We'll put that link in there too.
You also have a food rec for us, right?
Yeah. So I have some food resources. I have some lists of food resources, Black owned restaurants, a list guide. LA Eater wrote one, and also the LA Times did like this very extensive one. And in mine and Dave's neighborhood, there's a Black owned coffee shop that he and I have never been to, Obette and Dell's Coffee, and it's right by both of us, but we'll make a point to go to it in the next week and we'll report back. But I think that's a really, why that matters is I think supporting Black owned businesses and is a very, very small way to support our Black community. And on my Instagram also, I'm going to do a stories and I'll save it of Black owned businesses that you can purchase from online. And I think it's just a really nice way to support, our Black community and Black people in America. Like you can buy from anywhere in America. So those are my resources when it comes to food. Oh, and then there's also, I also have a link to, for vegan Black owned restaurants, and Black owned restaurants that are redefining vegan food. So that's also a link for people who, are vegetarian or vegan, or maybe just like plant-based and eat meat here and there, but we'll have all of those links too.
That's great. And that's, again, yeah, these will all be in the show notes. And it's funny you say like, it's such a small way to help. And it actually is huge, because the more businesses like this thrive, the more additional businesses like this can open. And
yes,
it's just such a, it's just, I don't know, the I don't know, the guilt is strong, obviously. And I think that that's, that's a natural reaction. But it's like just pushing through the feelings of discomfort and being like, oh, have I just not been supportive? And have I not used, because I think to a lot of people, you don't understand your own privilege. And it's, and if it, and it might not even feel like you have it. But if you wield it like a power, it's a power. And I would love to just be able to be supportive beyond my, donations and my
yeah.
words. Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. It's be supportive through your actions. And it's like, mm-hmm. For me, yesterday I set up a recurring donation of just $5 a month to the ACLU. And I used to donate to them. And then I stopped at some point because I think funds got tight, but I was like, that's the price of one, almost one coffee in LA, right? That's the price of almost one latte in LA. And that's once a month and it's $5. It's very manageable. All I have to do is not go to an expensive coffee shop, and I'm able to donate some of my money to a better cause than, a white owned coffee shop. Also, I also looked up two other resources that might be very helpful in case you're like, this is too many links. There are two apps that help you find Black-owned businesses, and one is Eat Black-owned, and one is Eat Okra. And both of those apps will help you find Black-owned businesses, I think, honestly, wherever you go, which is such a helpful thing. So if you're traveling, like today, I'm in Portland, I can use one of those apps and search for a place that's Black-owned to eat at tonight.
That's excellent. I hope everybody downloads that, because it seems pretty comprehensive.
Yeah.
I have, and this, this might be a no-brainer link or recommendation, but this past week's episode of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver is free on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And as is, I believe, all of his episodes, but this one is free and it's up and it's uncensored. It's a half an hour and it's all about the police, what's happening with the police right now, how they got, you know, how this started, essentially. And by this, I mean, you know, police brutality and the absolute power wielded by a lot of police departments. And it just, it helps to, it just, again, helps to paint that bigger picture. And I just, I don't want to beat myself up too much, but, you know, I've had a run-in or two with the police, and, you know, when I was much younger, and I am fine, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
And I am very grateful, but also I think about how, if what had happened to me had happened to a black 17-year-old,
yeah,
or if I was that black 17-year-old, I would either be, you know, locked up, have a felony possibly on my record, or be in jail. And again, it was not a very big thing that happened. It was just a suburban thing. But again, it's like questioning your own place in all of this is, I think, what the big,
yeah,
the big question we're posing to ourselves.
And we've benefited. Here's the thing. I've also had two, as maybe in my young early 20s, I've had two run-ins with the police where it ended very favorably for me, and one time in laughter by both me and the police. And I believe, in all honesty, if I was black, it would have ended in me being murdered. Like, that's the truth. And like, I didn't realize that privilege, like acknowledging that privilege that you and I and a lot, if not all, white people have benefited from the privilege of being white is like a very good start to doing the inner work and to getting right and acknowledging the racism that exists in us. But like, man, white privilege is incredibly real. And I feel like in some ways, like I experience it on multiple levels because look, I'm a Jewish woman, but I have light hair and I have light eyes and I'm very fair. And so I look, you know, and my dad's Swedish, so I look Swedish. And so it's like, I don't, you know, like I am the whitest white you can be. Do you know what I mean? Like it is,
I
would be spared in the Holocaust. Like I have a lot of privilege.
Oh, not me.
No. But it's like, you know, I have a lot of privilege, and acknowledging that and just being able to see that in the past week and 2 weeks, I have a lot of work to do on the acknowledgement and understanding of my own privilege, but it's very real. I do have a recommendation, just like something you and I had talked about before about burnout. Like we know there's a lot of resources out there, and we also know that like we're probably all being inundated with a lot of new information, and it's like it's kind of like learning a whole new language in a very short period of time. It's like you know, a quick course essentially. My friend who's a black poet and a whole list of other wonderful things, he's like a rapper, an artist, like he does literally everything. He just had his first TED talk, like a dream of his came true. His name's Joel Leon, and he did like a post recently, and I thought it was so beautiful because he comes from a place of compassion, not criticism. And this was his checklist that he wrote. Are you eating? Are you drinking water? Are you stretching? Did you take, or he wrote, took a break from the news, talked to a loved one, loved on yourself today, learned something new, shared a resource, doing things that bring you joy. And in his explanation of it, he says, the revolution requires self-care. Loving ourselves is part of the protest. And
oh, I like that a lot. I really like that.
I think it's really important to note, like, you don't have to beat yourself up. You don't have to learn this all in one day. It's just a commitment. It's kind of like, honestly, it's kind of like a relationship. It's a commitment to growing each day and choosing to wake up each day and choose someone. But in this case, you're choosing to learn more and to do more and to be active, you know, in being anti-racist.
Yeah. Well, that whole list is very, and it's a bummer because people don't apply, I think, any of these things, or some people don't apply any of these things to their day-to-day life, regardless of what's happening right now. And for me, you know, just a few short months ago, or just I guess a few short weeks ago, it wasn't at the top of every person's mind that, you know, who you are, basically before the desire to consistently and forever keep my privilege in check was a lot of this pandemic is really weird. Staying at home all the time is really weird. Oh, things are starting to reopen. It seems a little early. That mm-hmm. feels really weird. And all of the stuff on this list, eating, drinking water, stretching, taking a break from the news, it's really hard to, sometimes it's hard to do all these things. Sometimes I can go a whole day without.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I know. Without taking care of myself because I'm so
wrapped
inundated
up.
Inundated with news and wrapped up in what's going on. And that, I will admit, since we have shifted into a new phase of sheltering in place, which is sheltering half of the time in place and also trying to dismantle the system that has provided us with comfort and ignorance and has brought so much pain and suffering to the Black community, it's really easy to get caught up to the point where you're not taking care of yourself and then nobody benefits.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, is like when this all first happened, you know, within, so like the day before, I think the first protest, you know, my puppy died. Right. And
yeah,
I was so struck with grief for about 7 days plus that it was really hard for me to even function and do one of the things on the list, right? And my Joelle, who I referred to earlier, was like, hey, it's enough for you to take care of yourself right now. And like having him say that, because he also knows I'm an ally and that I will be active and I will get there, you know, having him give me the permission to grieve and to like be gentle on myself was sort of exactly what I needed, despite the fact that, you know, under normal circumstances, I would probably be able to give that to myself. But right now it just seems, you know, having a personal loss during the time of mass grievance is really hard to wrap your head around. You know, it feels selfish, it feels petty, it feels little in comparison. But the truth is, I would have not been of service to anyone had those 7 days that I chose to like just grieve, had I tried to help, it would have probably been hurtful to everyone, including myself.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and you know, we did not talk about if we were going to mention that, but again, it compounds everything. And the fact that you even considered for a second that it wasn't okay for you to feel individual personal grief when something so sad had happened is really, I mean, I don't like hearing that, but I also totally understand because it feels like everything that's happening is so much bigger than you, but you are your whole world and we can only make room for everything else if what is happening with ourselves individually is at least partially in check. And
yes.
I feel like you have, in spite of everything, been able to not bounce back. I mean, I know everything is still so sad and I'm so sorry for your loss. And she, you know, she's a beautiful, wonderful dog. She's, you know, I see her every time I go on Twitter because she's in my picture, you know?
Yeah.
She was a beautiful, wonderful girl and you gave her an amazing year of her life. She was found under, and we say it every time, under a pile of rocks in China. And you brought her into a world of tiny dogs and whimsy. And I watched her get happy. I watched her get less shy. She used to hide under everything when I came over and that didn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing that you did for her. And I'm so sorry that you lost her. But again, I'm glad you're able to feel your feelings because, you know, yeah, you wouldn't be able to do anything else if you couldn't do that.
Yeah. Oh, that made me cry. Yeah.
Oh, but
I feel like it's pretty incredible. Like, I think if there is a takeaway, it's like pretty incredible what loving something consistently can do and what doing anything consistently can do. You know, like, man, I was really glad I was able to give her that life, but also like, what a cool spiritual lesson and like, if I also commit to being anti-racist every day and I'm consistent with little actions over time, like what could that do for the world? Like, you can apply that to any of this right now. Like, if you're consistent in your relationship every day, little actions to make someone feel loved, what could that do for another person? If you're consistent with your food every day, what could that do for your body and your health? Like, it honestly works. It was such a good lesson for me. I'm so sad she's gone, but I'm so grateful, like, for the perspective. And I'm also so grateful that if she was only going to live 1 year, that it got to be with me, you know?
I know. And also that's a, and it really is an unbelievable takeaway from all of this to be able to mine that piece of wisdom. I honestly really will be thinking about that for a long time because, you know, you've been a dog owner or dog, you've taken care of animals for the better part of your life. And as a kid too, and I've never had a pet, and this is, you know, this sounds off topic from what we've been talking about, but I really feel like I will take this to heart that you just have to commit to it. Mm-hmm. I always have said, oh, I can't have a dog right now. I would want to just give it the best possible life. And I can't do that because my financial situation or because my work schedule or whatever. And I think that to that, I would say, just like everything else, it really is a process and it really just takes you telling yourself that this is something you're going to do. And yeah. So to any listener who is saying, okay, I'm going to make a donation to an organization, or I'm going to read an article, or I'm going to watch a documentary, and then because I can, I'm probably not going to think about this stuff too much more because my life hasn't changed that much. I would say to you, it's the small steps that make the biggest difference. So if you can find it in your heart to just every day do one thing, whether that's reading something, demonstrating, you know, watching something,
reposting,
writing, buying
from a black-owned store.
Yep. Writing to a congressman, writing to a city councilman. I don't know. This not only does it feel bigger than me and you and bigger than all of us, but it feels, I think sometimes that feeling can feel overwhelming and crushing. And that's coming from someone who feels that way about a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm an anxious guy. Not that should surprise anyone who has listened to our show for more than 3 seconds, but that's me. My nightmare is to be part of the problem, but I think that, you know, avoiding action is going to make you part of the problem. And so,
yeah, me too.
Devoting yourself to small actions or big actions that you can implement every day, much like caring for another living thing, much like nurturing a relationship, much like nurturing yourself with food. See, I did
yes.
it one time. I did it once. now it is officially a food and relationship podcast.
Yep.
But I think doing all of that in small incremental ways, building up to something, is only going to make the problem feel less insurmountable to everyone. And it's not just a personal thing. It's a community thing. It's a worldwide thing. It's a nationwide thing. But I'm grateful to have even a small mouthpiece with which to be like, hey, if you devote 90 minutes to watching this thing, you might learn something. If you read this, you might, absorb some information you didn't know before that you thought you might know.
Yep.
And if you donate to this link at the bottom of the page, you know, you're actually going to be helping a lot of people. So that feels like a good place to cap it for now. What do you think?
It sounds, honestly, feels great.
I'm so grateful to have not just the show, but to have you as a friend. I feel like you just now made being potentially wrong feel okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, if somebody listens to our show and finds something I said that was wrong and emails me, I don't think that I would, I don't think that it would make me feel terrible. I think it's okay.
No, it's
to
good.
Be approaching this. Yeah. To be approaching this with trepidation, but also with the knowledge that it's better to be misguided with your heart in the right place than to just be silent because
Okay. It's kind of like everything. I think if we get used to the idea of it being okay to mess up in this realm, like it will bleed into the others. It's okay to mess up with all of it. Like the less afraid we are of failure, the more I think we'll make a difference in terms of like, I think like being hesitant has never helped anyone. It just hasn't.
No, sitting on your hands only makes them fall asleep. And then, well, I was about to, never mind. I'm gonna end it there. At the risk of making a bad joke at the end of a nice episode. So, listeners, you know, when you download this on Apple Podcasts or anywhere, the description should have all the information we talked about laid out plain and simple. I will make sure that it's easy to understand or as easy to understand as possible right now. And, you can still email us at iburneverythingpod@gmail.com. If you have some resources that we missed that you'd like us to share with our audience, you can call us at 213-458-5236 with literally anything. You can rate and review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. But honestly, right now, that doesn't feel too important right now.
Do what you want.
but do what you want. Do what you need to do. Take care of yourselves. And Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
You shall not pass! Up listening to this new hilarious real play podcast starring a real life 6-year-old.
You see a giant red dragon and just a belch of fire just as it flies straight towards you.
And I just walk past it.
Check out the D&D Adventures of Coke the Kinder Giant on Campfire Media!
Campfire.